Hello, I'm Phil Rigotti. I'm a social care trainer and social worker from Strengthening Practice. You're joining us on this podcast where today we're talking about change. I'm joined by my colleague.
Hi, I'm Annie, and I'm the founder of Surviving Safeguarding and a social care trainer at Strengthening Practice too.
You will have seen, hopefully, recently on our website at strengthingpractice.co.uk that we had a really great blog written by Annie and also one of our new social tunes all about cycle of change. So what we thought would be really useful would be just to talk a little bit more about that, both from the perspective of a social worker and from the parent's perspective. There were some things, weren't there, Annie, that we were interested in terms of what this looks like on the ground for folk, particularly from a parent's point of view.
Absolutely. What I think was interesting for me was looking at the model, Prochaska and Di Clemente's model, and which was spoken about in Joe's social tune, and how that looked in reality from a parent's perspective. So if I put my own life experience and circumstances into that wheel, how I would move through the stages of change without any help or support, and what actually would affect my ability to move through the cycle. So things like structural inequalities, psychosocial inequalities, and systemic inequalities, I think, as well. So I was really interested in the model, but what I did find was most interesting was that where I could pinpoint I needed support to move between those stages of the wheel. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And I think from a social worker's perspective, the thing that we have to understand better and to work with more sensitively is not placing all the responsibility with the parent to change if we haven't paid attention to all of those barriers that are in the way that you just mentioned. And certainly I can think of lots of examples in my own casework where I've been frustrated with the parent. Why aren't they changing? Don't they understand how serious this is? Can't they see that there's a timescale? Without having paid enough attention to the things that just might get in the way or the things that I ought to be helping them with in terms of them being able to really make some meaningful change, particularly change that mattered to the child.
Yeah, so, I mean, that it's a two-way street, really, because we as parents feel that pressure as well. We have the sort of, you know, the stereotypical social worker breathing down your neck about time scales and these things must change now, and actually when you add that additional pressure of the change must happen within this specific period of time, what then happens is the change may not actually be a genuine change. It might be quite disingenuous. It might just be on the surface, and you might not have had the time to really think deeply about why you need to make this change, what support you need to help you make and sustain the change, and why you're doing it and why it's going to affect the child, and what will happen if you don't do it. That because you're adding that time pressure in, it just exacerbates an already highly pressured environment and situation that you're in.
Yeah, sure. And I think it's interesting, isn't it, for us as professionals working in this field that we see the change that we want in our mind's eye, and we think we're pretty clear about what change should happen. But maybe we're just not sitting down with parents enough and talking to them about what they want from a situation and how they'd really like to approach this change. We're only focused on the timescale. People need time, and typically, even within the model, Prochaska and Di Clemente's model, they do say, well, 6 months is around what you need to have any kind of sustainable change. But within that, you're going to have a sliding scale of some of the old behaviours that are still being worked out, some of the new ones that are being tested and being adjusted for. And I always remind myself that that's as relevant to me trying to get fit, trying to lose weight, trying to do whatever I want to do, as it is to a parent that's trying to understand about new parenting or new whatever it may be.
I think that's right. Certainly from my experience, you know, these conferences and review meetings and things like that, where you sort of you go away with a bit of a to-do list, and it's not always clear because quite often it's written in sort of jargon or, you know, social work language. So we're not always clear what exactly it is that needs to change and how we can use local resources and services to help us make those changes. Yeah. It's almost like you've given this task sheet, but you're not given the instructions to go with the you know, like when you're building a flat back bit of furniture,
yeah,
but you don't have the instructions, you just kind of guess. It's not too dissimilar, to be honest. And the expectation that you just know how to make the changes and know where to find the resources. And like you said earlier, that all of the expectation is on you. And it's you know, it is almost like, right, you need to get off drugs, you need to stop drinking, you need to leave your abusive partner, you need to make sure your house is clean, you need to do X, Y, Z. It's almost like the changes that you're making are superficial, and it's not delving deeper into the reasons why you are having these sort of engaging in these behaviors in the first place. So when you think about neglect, if, for example, you were to look at somebody's home and it was an absolute state, and there was dishes you know, a mess everywhere, and the children were dirty, and the general environment was unclean, it would be really simple to solve neglect, as it were, by just cleaning the house.
Yes.
But you're not actually looking, you know, and you could go weekly as a social worker, and, you know, every week, the day before the social worker comes, I'm sure that the parent would do a load of cleaning and look, I've changed, my house is clean. But what you're not doing, and what you're not figuring in, is the bit that says, why is this parent struggling to keep the on top of the home? Is it actually that it's too much? You know, it's too difficult, it's too hard. What's going on? And I think that's sometimes where social workers, with the greatest of respect, fall down. It's almost like we fix the symptoms, but we don't look at the underlying cause, because there's not, it brings in again time scales. There's not time.
No.
You know, you haven't got the time.
Yeah.
So that's the dilemma. I mean, I would put that to you. What would you say to that?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, there has to be something for the social worker, a consideration for them that is more about this individual's motivation to be different for themselves. And what would that different look like? Because I'm, as a social worker, I might be fairly clear in my mind about what should look different for the child. And I can feel some energy about that, and which is why we get grumpy about timescales, isn't it? Because we say, this child's growing up whilst you're not changing. But actually, my task ought to be to understand this person, the parent, better, to understand what kind of parent they wanted to be in the past, what kind of parent they hope to be in the future, what motivates them to be a parent, what are the passions that they have, and then to understand from them, well, what got in the way?
Yeah.
What was the thing that stopped you getting to where you want to get, and how can I help you get to where you want to be in terms of your parenting? Because I'm pretty clear, I think, that I've met some parents that have presented challenges professionally for me, but I've never met a parent that set out to be a terrible parent. Of course I haven't. What I have met are parents that have been preoccupied with so many other things, that have been tired, that have been stressed, that have been depressed, and that have had all those external factors getting in their way. Far too narrow, isn't it, for a social worker to just go, well, I'm afraid you just have to ignore that, I just need you to change these behaviors. And it doesn't make any sense, does it?
It doesn't. And I guess while you're talking, I'm thinking back to my childhood. So I guess often we hear about the 90-10 in social work. So I would say that my own childhood was that 10%, and my own parenting was probably the 90%, if I'm honest. And that's not to minimize my own mistakes with my parenting. I'm always very honest and very clear about those. However, what I experienced as a child would not have been fixed by a social worker coming in with a timescale and saying, you need to make these changes within 6 months.
Yeah.
I was being systematically abused within my home. What I needed to be was removed. And that eventually that was what happened. But there was, so I think that it's always worth while, you know, you have this 90% of where you can get in there and you can help parents make change. You will have that small amount of cases, where, like me, that child just needs to be taken out of that situation and made safe.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure that no matter how hard you worked, with my family, that I would have actually ever been safe in that environment.
It wasn't a question in your experience. It wasn't a question of motivation. And there had to be a very clear difference between saying there was a moment there that you just needed to be safeguarded. But we have to get that right, don't we? We have to make sure that we understand the difference.
Yeah.
But then in lots of ways, I'm thinking in terms of your experience growing up in that and then becoming a parent, what I really want as a social worker, and I think what we can work harder at, I want you as a parent and your children to have a different experience today. I want today to be a nicer day for you. I want today to be a day where you feel more motivated to go to the park and kick the football around, to cook a lovely meal together, to clean the house together and have fun doing it, potentially, if that's a possible thing. Apparently, I've heard that.
Don't know about that.
So there are some things, aren't there, where in our relational approaches, we miss an opportunity to go, okay, sometimes feeling motivated to play with your children is difficult. Mm-hmm. But you know what? I'm going to be here. Let's do it together. Let's find some things to do together. Let's work this out. Let's see what this feels like. Instead of saying, you need to play with your children, mum, mm-hmm. and leaving it to happen, I ought to be able to say, well, I'm going to take responsibility for holding those barriers to one side. Let's create a moment where we can do something different. Mm. And in lots of ways, that's only the same, isn't it, as if you or I wanted to get fit and we said to each other, well, you know what, we both got a motivation to try to run a little bit more, for example. Mm. Maybe what we need is for us to say to each other, well, I'm going to go for a run today. What about you?
Yeah.
Instead of me kind of going, well, how are you doing? Because I'm motivated and I'm doing well.
Yeah.
It's something about putting an arm around that says, let's just try it. Let's give it a go.
I tell you, some of the best experiences that I've had with working with professionals. So I'm not necessarily, I have had these experiences working with social workers, although I can distinctly remember a speech therapist that I worked with my youngest son, really learning so much from her. And what she was doing was creating a situation where I could model my behavior on her. So I'd learn. And what she just did was she just got down on the floor and she taught me, because my son is autistic and I've had to learn how to parent him. And it's been a challenge and it's been difficult, but incredibly rewarding at the same time. And now he's flying along. He's doing great. But when he was sort of two-ish and, you know, nonverbal, and we had to really learn picture exchange and Makiton and all sorts of ways of communicating so that I could learn how to meet its needs. Mm. The way that she did that was to, rather than saying, okay, you need to learn to communicate with your child, see you later, she got down on the floor and she taught me how to do it.
Yeah.
And I watched her. I used to sit on the sofa at the start of the session and watch the pair of them, because I sometimes felt a bit like I was intruding.
Yeah.
And then by the end of it, I was on the floor with them. And now I watch videos back of me and my younger son at that time doing these things that she taught us. And now I think of the benefits that produced.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
All it really needed was somebody to sit down exactly as you say, alongside me, and show me how. Mm. I think because I didn't have that scaffolding of a family around me, which is so important and you really need. I did have good friends, but I didn't have like a mum that would show me what to do. You know, it's sort of 16 and pregnant. Oh, you know, what do you do? And I think if you can work that, then change naturally comes, because you can see the benefits and the good stuff. Like I could really see my son responding to this speech therapist and it was incredible. And I was like, well, I want a bit of that. Thanks. Yeah, you know, and so I was straight down on the floor and getting down and dirty with a Makiton and, you know, and the cards and now we reap the rewards. So that's just one example. It's not really social work.
And it's what a lovely example. But that isn't that complicated in a way.
No.
Is it? It takes a different approach, doesn't it? And I think in my mind, back to the model, and if I'm thinking, well, someone's contemplating, so they're like, okay, well, I can see why that would benefit me. I can see why that would benefit people around me. And then moving into action, what I have to understand really well as a social worker, and I've got to be patient with, motivational interviewing talks about patience a lot, and sitting with uncertainty sits right in the middle of that, and being able to kind of go, give it a go, try it. Mm-hmm. How did you get on? Mm-hmm. Let's see about trying it again. But I think sometimes what happens is we see one little small action towards that new behavior, and we want to claim success too quickly. Mm-hmm. Instead of kind of realizing that there has to be an overlap, doesn't there?
Yeah.
I've got my old behavior, I've got my new target behavior, whatever that might be. Somewhere in the middle, I've got my overlap that looks like trying a new one at the same time as still sitting with the old ones.
Yeah.
And in my mind, when I think about me and change, I'm always like, you know what, I'd eat a chocolate bar right now if you gave me one. At the same time as me recognizing that I'm in the middle of a change process, which is called not eating chocolate bars. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean I've failed, and it doesn't mean I'm in success yet either. It's just kind of going, well, I'm trying the new behavior. I don't like it yet, but I'm trying it a little bit more. Mm-hmm. The more I try the new behavior, the less the old one is present.
Yeah.
So our clunkiness professionally sometimes is kind of saying, we have to cut off one and start a new one, don't we? You've got to stop that. You mentioned it. It's the abstinence problem, isn't it? Mm-hmm. You must stop drinking. Well, and no, there's got to be some overlap where I'm trying this new behavior at the same time as managing the risk of the old behavior. That takes a skilled human social worker to kind of go, tell me how you're getting on. What have you tried new? How's this new thing going for you? And be willing to allow testing and adjusting, because we've got a maintenance phase, haven't we, that can last a long time.
Absolutely. I think for me that it has to be, I mean, you mentioned the word motivation there, and in a different context, I want to pick up on that, because I guess going back many, many years, that I worked with social workers and had a breakdown, needed my children to be accommodated, and then realised the full force of the local authority when they were considering care proceedings. And I just thought, oh my God, what on earth is this? And really got a bit of a taste of the power dynamic that was to come in later years, and immediately learnt the language of social work and learnt very quickly to demonstrate change without actually having changed a thing. And that's something that I talk about a lot is I hate this term disguised compliance. It's rubbish. It's a rubbish term. But unfortunately, that is descriptive of what I was doing. So I was set to change my behavior. You must, you know, stop doing X, Y, Z, and start doing A, B, C.
Yeah.
So I would superficially stop doing X, Y, Z and start doing A, B, C. And be able to very carefully demonstrate that to the social worker. But in actual fact, nothing had changed. I was just able to demonstrate that it had changed because I was clever.
Yeah. And you know what, Annie, as a social worker, I would say, of course, I have to recognize that that's just human behavior, isn't it? That's just human behavior. When if I went for a run and I was tired, I might be tempted to walk a little bit. Right until I saw you driving past in your car, and then I spot you and quickly start running. You know the thing.
Yeah.
Where I'm kind of like, there I am running, running past you, kind of going, here I am running.
Yeah.
As soon as you've gone around the corner, I stop and I walk again. That is just me getting used to my new behavior, but trying to say to you, yes, look, here I am. I'm trying it. We wouldn't describe that as disguised compliance in that context, would we?
We wouldn't. But if the stakes were, now, Phil, if you run, you can keep your kids. If I see you walking, you're going to lose them kids.
Right, right.
I'm damn sure you would keep running no matter what. You would just keep running.
I'll make sure that you never see me running or not running. And I'll just tell you that I've been lots and lots of times.
Absolutely. You know? But you would be too scared. If you did go out for a run, you would actually be too scared to stop running in case you were seen, because the stakes are so high. So this is, I guess, this was my point, was that when the stakes are so high, it can be very easy to mimic change. And I guess it takes a skilled practitioner to go, okay, not, you know, I don't believe you and I'm going to try and pull this apart, but just actually, how easy is it for you to make this change? How sustainable is it? And where do I fit in?
How can I support you with this? Yeah.
What are the structures? What are the systems? What are the resources that you need? What is the money? What is the time? What do you need from me as a social worker? Because essentially, I think that was what was missing from my relationship with the local authority, was that real feeling of partnership working, which I have more now, but I certainly didn't have then when I was mimicking change, as it were. But I think if you have someone that comes to you and say, look, I know this is difficult to make this change, but I'm going to help you to do it. You're much more likely to then go, oh, okay, I'll give it a go, than someone saying, you're going to make this change. And if you don't, I'm going to take your kids away. And because then you just scare somebody into making a change rather than it being really from their gut. And when I started to really genuinely make changes, it was for the little girl that was abused as a child. It was for her as much as it was for my little children, who also did not deserve to be parented, or they deserved to be parented in the best way that I could parent.
But that had to be in the right moment in your life, didn't it, as well, as an adult looking back on your own childhood, that had to make sense to you, and you needed to be in a situation where you could go, actually, Now I'm ready for this. Now I understand why this matters to me and to my own children.
So Phil, how can you tell if how would you be able to tell the difference between a parent that genuinely wants to make change and is at the right place in their life to a parent that is wanting to make superficial change in order to make you go away? How does that work?
I think for me, there has to be something about looking out for change talk, which is again what the model would suggest. A motivational interviewing talks about change talk. But I want to hear something from them that can tell me about activity that they've taken on board themselves, thoughts they've got, ideas they've got, end goals that they're identifying for themselves that I then just need to get on the back of and encourage and support and offer some motivation around. If all of the talk comes from me around what needs to change, then I think reasonably I shouldn't expect to see too much change. Mm-hmm. I want to hear that person talking about what they want to do differently, because that also shows me that they've understood why the change matters. Mm-hmm. But again, there's a starting point, isn't there? Have I done a good enough job explaining to this parent or a child, it could be, why I think there's a change that should take place? Have I given them the alternatives? Do they fully understand why this change is something that's useful to anybody? That's my first starting point, isn't it? And if I haven't done that bit, then we're always going to be tripping up on that. And then I just want to be able to say to them, well, great. Well, it sounds like you're motivated. How do you think you want to start this? What can I do to help you? But as soon as I set foot in telling them what I want them to do, then they will just try to keep me happy, won't they?
Yeah.
So I have to encourage and I have to look for something that's come from that individual. Ideas for me is always the place I start. Mm-hmm. What have you thought about already? What ideas have you already got? And if they say, well, I don't know, you tell me, you're the one that wants the change. Mm-hmm. Then I have to roll it back and think, OK, I haven't done a good enough job at helping you understand where I'm coming from here. Let's back to the partnership thing, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do they know why I'm here? Do they understand what I'm trying to achieve on behalf of their children? Mm. And have I heard from them mm-hmm. that they're on the same page as me?
And how, you know, realistic do you think that working method is, given things like timescales? Do you think that you are able to work like that with a parent if you've only got 26 weeks?
Yeah. So I think this probably leads us to what would be a great subject for another day, in that a lot of our structures would say to us that if we have to remove the child from a parent's care to keep them safe before we feel that parent has got to anywhere near as much as a meaningful change as we wanted to see, we should maintain our services at that point to that parent. Because the moment we say to that parent, well, you didn't get there quick enough and the services follow the child, then we undermine any ounce of motivation that parent might have had. So I think we have to structurally look at that parent and go, we're going to support you to make this change. Now we've heard from you that you really understood why this matters and how you can do it, what ideas you've got, how we can support you. Let's make sure we put the right service provision in with the right people, with the right approach, that stick by that parent until that parent is able to go, you know what, I think I'm really getting somewhere now.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we might have had to make other provision for the child, which is, of course, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I think it pains me that we have to say to parents, didn't get there quick enough, and we leave them to really walk back into their house minus a child, feeling like they failed.
Well, you absolutely do. I mean, that was one of the considerations in terms of my youngest proceedings was, can I make these changes and undertake this therapy in this given time for this child? And I did have to walk into my home without my child and spent, you know, 8 months, nearly 9 months without my child, making the changes, sustaining the changes, demonstrating the changes, you know, and none of it was superficial. It was all very much, I really genuinely was motivated to change. But there wasn't that scaffolding. It very much felt like once my child was removed, I was kind of ditched and I was then left to make those changes myself. Now, if I was a not as strong person as I am, I think that would have then meant that the changes just would have stopped or plateaued and I wouldn't have been motivated because I didn't have that living being there to keep me going.
Yeah.
But fortuitously, I'm strong and I'm resilient and I was very motivated to make the change. So I didn't need the scaffolding.
No.
But I would not say that's true of everyone.
No. And of course, I ironically, when we're talking about change in parenting, if the child isn't even in the household, then that parent has very limited, if any, opportunity to test these new behaviours and to get feedback around how they're getting on.
Yeah.
So, you know, we need to do something about that, don't we? And I think structurally, we're not where we need to be in that regard. There's some good practice around.
Yeah, there is.
I think there's some individual good practice, and there's some local authorities that understand this really well. But it takes resources, doesn't it? It takes somebody to go, we'll keep supporting you, mm-hmm. Because we recognise that you're on a journey that's going to take you some time.
Yeah.
And I think
it's being patient again. Definitely. But I mean, the system's not set up to be patient. That's the difficulty, is I think that we do have some incredible social workers in this country who really want to see this out with parents and help them to make the changes. And they're slotted into a local authority that perhaps just does not have the structures and systems around it to help them. So it's how individual practitioners, I guess, can just tailor their own practice within the remit of the local authority's resources.
Yeah.
In order to help parents make and sustain changes for the good of their children.
Yeah, for sure. And I think something that rumbles around for me as a practitioner too is my level of suspicion that traps everybody. And I've got a lovely example actually of a parent who was trying so hard to improve the home conditions in her house. And I'd tried to be as warm as I could. It's my practice approach really is to try to be relational. Because, well, why wouldn't I? Be kind whenever you can be. And I turned up to this parent's house one day, and the house was still pretty chaotic, and it still was nowhere near clean and tidy or functional, really. But she had a potpourri on the coffee table. You know, it was a little jar with some nice smelling stuff on. And I kind of looked at it, and it was really incongruous. It was like, oh, there's a potpourri on your coffee table. And she looked at me expectantly like, yeah, I've got a potpourri. But we had a lovely conversation, actually. And the long and short of the conversation was that she'd hoped that the potpourri would be enough for now to show me that she was making an effort. When actually she said, oh, I knew it was a bit pointless because it's not about the potpourri, is it? It's about all the other stuff. But the potpourri was easy. I could buy that. It didn't cost me very much. I put it on the coffee table in the hope that that was at least going to get us started with this journey. And that became for us in our working relationship the symbol of, let's watch out for those things happening again. Let's talk more about what's getting in the way for you to do all the other stuff you want to do. The moment you feel like you're trying to do something which is just keeping me happy, please do tell me that, and we can talk about why that is. Because actually the end result for me was to say, but you know what, hey, it smells lovely in here.
So
at the same time I was like, well, I'm not dismissing that. So you know, the suspicion that we have sometimes of going, ah, but they've only put that potpourri just to make me think that they've made progress. In my professional approach, I would say, yeah, but actually they have made progress.
Yeah.
There's reasons for it, and we need to work those through, and we need to talk about that. But actually, if they've cleared that corner this week, if they've taken their children to the park this week and kicked the football round, don't dismiss that, because that still took some effort.
Absolutely.
And there is still benefits to be found in that. So there's a strength-based approach that has to rumble across the background of all of this stuff, isn't there, really?
I think so. And I think the parent as well has to recognise that strength-based approach. I mean, I can remember going to therapy sort of 2007-ish and working with a cognitive behavioural therapist. And she was around about the right age to be my mother, and she didn't have any children. And what I found and what I noticed about the therapy, and I actually didn't notice this at the time, but I reflected on it years later. What I realized is that some of my sessions were spent people pleasing her, and saying the things that I knew she wanted to hear. And there was a massive breakthrough came in terms of working through my abuse and working through my huge guilt that, you know, I hadn't done enough to leave or whatever. And what, you know, all the sort of awful, you know, stuff that you feel when you're a kid and you're being abused. And she did get to me at the sort of towards the end of the therapy and really stripped me down. So we got there in the end, but it took 9 months.
Yes.
And along the way were definitely some diversions where I took the people pleasing route rather than the I'm going to work really hard today. But the fact is, I turned up every week.
Yeah.
And for me, on reflection, I can say, well, that probably took twice as long as it should have. But actually, I turned up every week and I did everything she asked me to do. And it might not have always had the right motivation behind it, but I did it and I learned from it. And the end result was that I did manage to make some changes and sustain those changes. So actually, the end result was great. It just took longer. And obviously, if I had been in care proceedings, it would have taken too long,
yeah.
and it would have been outside of my child's timescales, and
yeah.
I could have
yeah.
kissed my child goodbye to adoption. So mm-hmm. I guess even when it has taken longer, or it hasn't gone, you know, because change is not linear, and you know, you do go backwards and forwards and across and left and right and up and down, and I guess that's all right.
Yeah.
And it's just, yeah, for sure. it's letting people know that it's okay to relapse, and it's okay to, you don't have to be perfect all the time. But what we do need is the people to be there to support us, mm-hmm. professionally, whether we're doing really well, whether we are, not doing really well, or whether we are somewhere in the middle. Regardless, we just need that consistent and continuous support to help us make and sustain those changes.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Excellent. That sounds like a really good place to end.
Yeah, that does.
Doesn't it? I think there's some threads, aren't there, that we probably need to pick up again, I think, in the future for our next podcast.
Sure. I think it'd be interesting to hear back from people to
definitely
what do you think, folks?
You know, what do you think?
What would you like us to talk about next? And, you know, and where do we go with this next? Because it's an interesting conversation, particularly the dynamic of having a social worker and a parent service user, whatever you want to call me, and managing that tension there. And it's just, I think it's a helpful conversation for people to listen to. So it'd be great to have some feedback from people as to what they would like to hear from. Yeah.
Yeah, let's know. Meanwhile, folks, you can go to www.strengtheningpractice.co.uk and you can check out Annie's blog. You can find our social tunes there. And of course, you'll find us wherever you found us already on social media. Of course, we're active on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook too. You can find us on LinkedIn. Have a conversation. We'd love to hear from you, wouldn't we?
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely love to. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, you know what? I'm feeling really motivated.
That's good. I'm going to go make some changes right now.
Go and do that right now.
I will. Okay.
Go and do something too. Lovely talking with you again, Annie, as always. We look forward to hearing what the folks think, don't we?
Great. We will do. Okay, thanks for listening, everyone.